Listen to WGN Radio's newest podcast, Behind the Badge, Illinois, hosted by David Hochberg. Behind the Badge, Illinois views current events through the eyes of Illinois law enforcement leaders. Tune in. Visit WGNradio.com/behindthebadge.
Collegiately speaking.
And we're underway. Needs a block on the kicker. He gets it. And will he go the distance? Yes, he will.
As the Hokies deliver the dagger here in Tallahassee.
Intercepted by the Wildcats. The Wildcats win. Unbelievable.
Here's Collegiately Speaking, your one-stop shop for college football news. Collegiately Speaking. With Dave Eddy.
Boom!
And former Northwestern quarterback Dan Person.
How much you want to make a bet I can throw a football over the mountain?
Collegiately Speaking.
Welcome to another chapter of Collegiately Speaking, our weekly look at what's happening with college football, with an eye on Northwestern and the Big Ten. Dave Eddy with former Wildcat quarterback Dan Persa. Into week five of college football, we start to get into the meat of the conference season. That's true in the Big Ten this week, even though we've seen several teams already play conference games. Dan, watching the Wildcats take on Ohio on Saturday at Ryan Field, and they introduced the 2010 and 2011 Wildcat squads. And I'm looking out there. Where's Dan Persa? He's got to be out there, but I couldn't find you on the field.
I was on babysitting duty. You know, unfortunately, with a little girl at home and the wife out of town, I couldn't make it. But obviously, I watched the game very intently and was bummed not to be there with my teammates.
Yeah, see, I noticed there were a couple little kids out there, too, because you guys from those teams are all at that age now, right? Where you have little ones. So it was kind of fun, fun to watch. But good game for Northwestern against a MAC team that still hasn't won a game yet. I mean, we got to keep it in perspective. But after the loss at Duke the week before, it was a very nice bounce back for them, especially considering that they made a quarterback change and they really were able to run the ball pretty much at will against Ohio most of the game.
Yeah, I agree. I think it was a good bounce back game. I think, you know, while if you look at the score, the game was probably a little bit closer, especially in the first couple quarters. But I think, you know, the Wildcats are just starting to get some stuff figured out, right? Hopefully Holinsky at quarterback is now solidified. It seems like Andrew Marty might have a more serious injury since he didn't play. But you know, I thought Ryan looked pretty good. They didn't ask him to do a ton as they typically don't in non-conference games, but I was impressed with, you know, his arm strength and his decision-making ability. There's obviously things to improve on, but I think, you know, he's a raw talent and will be exciting to see progress over the year and over the coming years. And then on defense, I think it was good to see them make a couple changes, especially on the back end with AJ Hampton starting, as well as Coco Azima starting at safety. So I think, you know, like any other season, Coach Fitz, you know, tries to get some things figured out early and then puts the right guys in there in the Big Ten season, and then we'll kind of continue to improve.
And what's also nice, I think, defensively is to see them coming up with turnovers, and this was the second game in a row where they did it. And I think they've got 10 takeaways now through four games, but they had three on Saturday, a couple interceptions. Nice to see Brandon Joseph get his first on a tip pass. And here's a guy who had six interceptions last year. He was the Big Ten Freshman of the Year, led the nation in interceptions, and he would certainly hope he's come close, but to finally get his hands on one, you would hope that maybe this will be the start of something, because he had a couple of games last year where he had two picks in each one. And you know, this team, I think, had some chances for more, right? They're getting hands on some balls where, you know, maybe they're going to force some more turnovers. And that's been the personality of this defense under Mike Hankowitz. And now I'm sure Jim O'Neill doesn't mind seeing that either.
Absolutely. And I think it just, like we talked about, takes a little bit of time with so many new faces across the defense. A lot of guys that have played, but not a lot of guys that have started. Especially on the front seven. And I think, to your point, Brandon Joseph, it's always hard to follow up a season like that, especially from an interception standpoint, when he made a ton of great plays last year, but there was also times where, you know, he was right place, right time. And now people are just more aware of him and they're going to stay away from him. He's kind of everywhere from a ball hawking standpoint. So yeah, I agree. You know, the more the Cats can continue to come up with turnovers and frankly take care of the ball on offense, they're going to be in every game. And if we know one thing, it's that the Wildcats will be close in the fourth quarter, and they like close games.
Ryan Helinski, in his first start for Northwestern, numbers aren't the type that are going to blow you away, right? He only threw the ball 20 times, completed 12 for 88 yards. But it seemed to me, watching, that he did a good job managing the game. Now, he did have one pass that he was fortunate. They were back on their own goal line, and it went in and out of the arms of the defender, who would have had a pick six there. But, I mean, you're going to make some mistakes over the course of a 60-minute game. But overall, your evaluation of how he played?
I agree that he wasn't really asked to do a ton, and I guess it's one of the things I frankly disagree with Coach Fitz and maybe their strategy, especially in these early games for inexperienced quarterbacks. I know they want to establish the run and you know, dominate the line of scrimmage, but I would also use games like this to get the receivers and quarterbacks a little bit more confident. But at the end of the day, I thought he made some really strong throws, some, you know, post throws that were impressive. And I think he was decisive and he was getting the ball out of his hands relatively quick. Like you said, there's things he can clean up, like some balls that he threw on the run that weren't great. But at the end of the day, I like how Ryan's a competitor. He played in the SEC as a true freshman. He seems relatively unflappable out there. And I think when we get into Big Ten play, he's going to elevate his play and continue to improve. He's still a really young quarterback. So I'm cautiously optimistic about him, and really excited to see him get into Big Ten play.
And you have to be excited about Evan Hull, because it just seems like this guy has a knack for making big plays, long runs. From the very first game, we really got a good look at him against UMass in 2019, where he ran for 220 yards and four touchdowns. He ran for 216 on Saturday, a 90-yard touchdown run, the longest touchdown, the first 90-yard run for Northwestern since 1961. So, I mean, he's also a guy, just seems like he runs with a little bit of anger, Dan. He's tough to bring down. And then you compliment him with the other two guys, Andrew Clare and the freshman Anthony Tyus, and they using him in the Wildcat. This running game really has some things going here, which you worried about with the loss of Cam Porter.
Absolutely. And I think coming into the season, we all knew that the running back room would frankly be probably the strongest position group on the team, maybe save the defensive backs. Obviously, it was sad to see Cam Porter go down, but I think the coaches were still very confident. And now we're seeing why with the stable of three running backs they have that, to your point, frankly, complement each other really, really well. So I love Evan Hull. I always, you know, thought he was a hidden gem even last year, but behind Cam. But he's really taken this opportunity to shine. I think he'll continue to shoulder a lot of load as the Cats get into the Big Ten play.
Yeah, we didn't even mention the running backs in the fourth quarter. Three or four other guys got a chance to carry the ball. One of them, Jake Arthurs, got a chance to score a touchdown. One of them, Connor Newhouse, had a real nice 25-yard run. So always good to see those guys get a chance. We'll talk about this week's game in Nebraska. But first, let's take a look at the bigger picture through the first month of the college football season. Adam Rittenberg, senior writer covering college football for ESPN, kind enough to join us. Adam, you've had a chance to sample a lot of the college football we've seen through the first month of the season here. And I guess, just for starters, seems like there are some surprise teams that are unbeaten here heading into the meat of conference play. Some teams have losses that don't normally have losses this time of year. What's your biggest takeaway through the first month or so?
Well, David, it's really that. You look at the preseason top 25, and it's so different now, and maybe more so than it has ever been, or at least in recent memory. You know, Clemson was number three. They have two losses. Ohio State was number four. They have a loss and haven't looked very good. Iowa State, number seven. They have two losses. North Carolina, number 10. They have two losses. Wisconsin, number 12. They have two losses. Miami, number 14, two losses. USC's fired its coach. They have two losses. They were all in the top 15.
Right.
And it just shows that this was has been a very surprising year, and one that has a lot more drama, I think, than recent seasons. at least regarding the college football playoff, because we are going to have some variety, most likely. Doesn't mean Alabama won't get there. They likely will. Georgia looks very, very strong, but it's been a few years since they've been in the playoff. And then after that, it's really anyone's guess. It could be Penn State and or Iowa out of the Big Ten. Oregon aiming for its first playoff appearance since the very first CFP back in 2014. The Big 12 is wide open. Notre Dame isn't out of it. You know, Cincinnati plays Notre Dame this week, and they want to build their resume as a Group of Five contender. So it's really a wide open season, which is kind of refreshing, honestly, after what we've gotten the last, you know, 5, 6, 7 years.
No doubt.
Yeah, Adam, thanks again for joining us. Dan Pearce here. You kind of just mentioned all the parity that we're seeing, and I don't know if this is a fair question, but do you think it's good for college football in general and good for kind of the fandoms across the country? You probably have the best pulse of anybody on where people are at mentally and you know, at the top of the pack. With this much parity, do you think it brings fans back in the game? What are some of the positives for college football?
Yeah, absolutely, Dan. I think it brings in more regions of the country, more fan bases, and there's just a lot more drama when, you know, there's so many teams that maybe haven't been as involved, or leagues that haven't been involved in the playoff conversation that are going to be. And, you know, until we get an expanded playoff, we're stuck with four, and so it's very limiting. And, you know, certainly the SEC has been very strong. Ohio State, Clemson, Oklahoma have all been very strong programs. And so you haven't had much variety. And so, you know, it's certainly not great if you're a Clemson fan or, if you're one of those other two lost teams that I mentioned. But it is great because for other teams and regions and leagues, because you're going to be discussed as long as your teams continue to win. And there's an element of drama. I mean, I remember back in the 2007 season, it was really the last, you know, truly like wild, wild season when you had every team had a loss or two, and we didn't know who was going to get into the national championship game. And Ohio State lost to Illinois, and they still somehow made it to the national championship game. And then LSU won the whole thing, even though they were a flawed team. So I think it makes it more fun this way, but certainly isn't as much fun if you're a Clemson fan.
Yeah, it's true. Kind of dovetailing off the parity discussion, you know, this might be a better question for our friend Darren Revelle, but how do you feel like the NIL implications will move or flow towards, you know, more parity or frankly less parity for some of the big schools that, you know, are typically in the hunt?
Well, I think I think a lot of coaches who think it will just continue to funnel players to a certain number of programs, but I think it is an opportunity for other programs that maybe haven't been in that top five or top ten to take advantage of their own environments and recruit to, hey, come here and look at the NIL potential that you'll have as quarterback of our school or as a star defensive player of our school. You know, Oregon's taking advantage of that right now, not surprisingly, with their Nike connection. I think USC, even though they're going through now another coaching change, could be very proactive in terms of their location in Los Angeles and trying to sell that as part of NIL. But you know, Alabama, not surprisingly, will have some benefit. Ohio State and some of those other programs. I'm just more curious, Dan, whether the money will continue to flow in at the high levels like it has for a number of these athletes, or if the business side of it will, you know, behave differently. Because as you guys know, you know, you don't make emotional decisions in business. It ultimately has to bring in return. And I just don't know yet, it's still so soon, whether these big dollar amounts that are being given out in these agreements are actually bringing in the return on the business side for them to then continue to doing that, to continue to do them.
You know, Adam, that's a great point, because I think there's a certain novelty to it right now, which may have sort of led to some of these deals that we heard in the early days of NIL being handed out, like the guy in Miami giving every player on the team something to endorse his fitness centers or whatever it was and things like that. But eventually everybody's got budgets, right? And you just can't have this enormous flow of money going to athletes to promote you on their social media without knowing whether you're getting any benefit from it.
Yeah, no doubt, Dave. And I was speaking with a Pac-12 coach about it before the season because, you know, it's just so different in that league. You have schools that are located in major cities. You have Oregon, It's obviously affiliated very closely with, you know, the biggest athletic apparel brand ever in Nike. And so we were just talking about this that point exactly. Like, you know, will this just be a first year thing or a second year thing? And we all love the story of the BYU walk ons all right. getting their tuition paid for. But you know, is that company going to be in the position to do that year after year? It's obviously great publicity for them, especially with so much attention on NIL. But as this becomes more just a part of the game, and again, I was never one of those people who felt like this was going to ruin college sports and it's going to change everything. There's a lot of doom and gloom out there. It's like everything. It's just something you have to change and adjust to, and eventually it's going to be more normalized. And when that happens, I know if these corporations and individual businesses are going to be as eager to do it. And the one thing that certainly works in favor of the players is that there is an emotional connection for a lot of these companies, especially when they're local, you know, mm-hmm. to be supportive of, you know, local you know, the state school or whatever school is in their area. I mean, that's something that will continue to be there, but I just don't know if the enthusiasm will remain where it is right now if the return doesn't show up. Now, maybe the return will, but we just don't know yet.
Yeah, I think it's great we're having this conversation and that these players have the ability to do this, but I think it's just kind of the wild, wild west right now. Let's talk a little about the Big Ten. Five teams in the conference have not lost a game. That's not all that unusual, I guess, at this point of the season, except for some of the schools that haven't lost yet. Michigan State, and we saw them opening night in Evanston against Northwestern. They looked really good. But in my mind, it's been more impressive to see what they've done since then. Their win at Miami, certainly a big one for them. And Maryland also being unbeaten now. I guess the question, Adam, are these programs legit right now in terms of being in that Big Ten East race as you look down the road?
Well, I think that you know, what they've done, as you mentioned, Dave, you can't discount it. And I've just been so impressed in different ways with those two programs. Michigan State, you know, talking about a modern approach to roster building, they essentially flipped their roster in an offseason. They went into the transfer portal. They added 20 players, including 15 transfers from FBS institutions. And I talked with their head coach, Mel Tucker, a few weeks ago, and he said, you know, we went to our existing players and basically said, we need to get better. We need to get better players. We're going to be bringing in a lot of players. Either you can stay here and compete and welcome them in, or you can leave. And it was a very black and white approach. And he said, by communicating that way directly and not trying to sugarcoat things, at least for so far, it's working. And the players they've brought in, and certainly Kenneth Walker Jr. from Wake Forest has gotten the most attention. Kenneth Walker III, sorry, the running back who had the big game against Northwestern and mm-hmm. also against Miami. You know, he's gotten the most attention, but there's been guys on defense, and they've really come from all over the country. And just their ability to integrate so many new faces. I mean, Dan knows it's hard. You bring in new guys who haven't been part of a program, and sometimes it doesn't work in the locker room. So far, at least, it appears to be working at Michigan State. And then at Maryland, you know, anyone who's followed Mike Loxley's career knew that he would recruit well, especially in that part of the country. He's from Washington. He has a lot of relationships there. He recruited well from that area when he was the offensive coordinator at Illinois. So there's a lot of familiarity, and they have talent on that team, and they seem to have made some improvement on defense, which was not a good unit last year, and they're also taking pretty good care of the football. Now, we'll find out much more about Maryland this week against Iowa as they come into College Park on Friday night. But I think that's a team, at least you look at their talent at receiver, at quarterback, and then some improvement on defense. You know, they're going to be a team to watch in the East Division.
Adam, really interesting point on Michigan State. I guess for my own education and frankly maybe some other listeners out there, how does a coach or Mel Tucker really go about, you know, turning over a whole roster? Is it, you know, outreach from former programs? Is it different relationships? Is it like putting the word out to the waiver wires, using an NFL term, on hey, we're open for business, come here? Like, how mechanically, how does that go down?
Right. Well, you know, the staffs have increased significantly even since you played, and you have a lot more awareness of what is going on elsewhere. And, you know, I think they had a number of players who left the team after last season, which didn't go well. And they obviously had a very late coaching change, as Mel was only hired in February and didn't really have much opportunity to work with the team because of COVID, at least directly. And so it was a very odd season. So they had open roster spots, but they also were very direct, as I mentioned, with the existing players in saying, we need more good players here. And so I think it's, awareness. Mel's a guy who's had a really interesting career in that he's worked at a lot of big time programs and in the NFL. So he's somebody who's very well connected. He also has staff members who have worked in different parts of the country. Some of them were with him at Colorado, but a number of them also had worked in the ACC or in the Southeast in the SEC. So I think that also helped that they were pretty geographically diverse as a staff and also very geographically aware of who might be interested in making a move. I mean, you know, Wake Forest is 4-0 right now without Kenneth Walker. Imagine what they would be doing with him. And he's certainly been a great addition, but there's been others on defense, you know, added a transfer from Alabama, transfer from Florida, who are both playing significant roles on defense. And also they added 5 transfers from the FCS. So it's not just an FBS to FBS haul, but as you guys know, there's so many players in the portal. It's just about finding who are the best fits, who can help right away. And to Michigan State's credit, they seem to have done that. But the most impressive part to me, guys, is the locker room integration, because you bring in that many players, it has the potential to be a disaster in the locker room. And you know they're winning, which helps, but so far that has certainly held together nicely.
Very impressive. We're talking with Adam Rittenberg from ESPN. And Adam, before I let you go, I've got to ask you about the Big Ten West, because the feeling going in was that it was pretty wide open. Iowa certainly has come in and taken control early in terms of what they've done so far, the impressive victories they've had early on in the season. And now they've got this test coming up, as you mentioned, Friday night in Maryland. But Wisconsin, with a couple of losses already, and yeah, I know the Notre Dame score was maybe a little more lopsided than the game actually was, but to see them not in the top 25 is weird. Northwestern obviously has had their struggles through the first 4 games. They're the defending Big Ten West champs. Minnesota had a loss to a MAC team over the weekend. Nebraska's had 2 tough losses against good teams on the road. And so beyond Iowa, how do you look at the Big Ten West right now?
Yeah, it's going to be really interesting, because even though you know, the Hawkeyes, seemingly have the best team and the inside track to get back to the Big Ten championship game for the first time since 2015. You know, they are very aware of the fact that they're not going to walk onto the field and be imminently more talented than really any of those other teams that you mentioned. So it's not going to be an easy road. Wisconsin's still very talented on defense, and that's not their problem. They have some major issues to work out on the offensive side. Minnesota, unfortunately, lost their best player, Muhammad Ibrahim, in the opener against Ohio State. They had a nice win against Colorado, but then took a major step back, at least offensively, in that loss to Bowling Green, as you just mentioned. And so I think that league or that division to me, and you both know it well, is so much about development and who develops the best over the course of the season and who makes the fewest mistakes. It's been absolutely the calling card of Northwestern that they've been a team that has gotten better typically over the course of a season, and they also haven't made as many mistakes as their opponents. And that, you know, has been an issue this year, is that they're making more mistakes. And so we'll see if they can evolve. Wisconsin, can they improve offensively to a point where they're more formidable? I think you guys mentioned a Nebraska team that clearly has improved but continues to find ways to lose and has been a mess on special teams. And can they clean up those areas to start winning games? So I still think there's drama in the West, but I also really like what Iowa is and what they have been. Honestly, they're a team that has been, I think, 41-19. They were since they had made the Big Ten championship game going into the season. And now I guess it's 45-19. So that would indicate a team that's primed to get back to Indianapolis, and they certainly have that opportunity this year.
Well, I kind of look at Wisconsin's schedule end of next month and beginning of November, and they get both Iowa and Northwestern at Camp Randall sandwiched around a trip to Rutgers. So that could have a lot of say in who comes out of the West this year. I think that stretch of the season. But you never know. Wisconsin gets Michigan this week. That's another big one. Adam, we could go on and on. I appreciate your time. I know you've got things to do. Thanks for jumping on with us. And again, follow Adam Rittenberg at ESPN Rittenberg on Twitter. And let's check in later in the season, okay?
Yeah, absolutely. Dave and Dan, you guys are the best. Thanks for having me on, and let's do it again for sure.
Sounds good. Thanks. All right, thanks to Adam for joining us. Some great points, Dan. Just there's so much still that can unfold this season in college football, but you have some of these traditional powers that have, if they haven't stubbed their toes completely, they just haven't looked like you normally expect them to play. I don't know what the reason is for that necessarily, but if it's parity, so be it. Because, look, parity's been pretty successful for the NFL for a long time, and seeing a little parity in college football, if you have more teams that are in the mix, that keeps the fans of those teams more engaged, and it gets everybody more involved.
Agreed. I think it's great for college football, like we talked about, just, you know, involving different teams. And you're going to see this when, you know, top programs lose top players like Justin Fields and Trevor Lawrence, and you kind of go down the list. But I think it's good for college football. It makes it fun. And to your point, the NFL's thrived off it for a very long time. So I'm sure college football taking a page out of the NFL book is well worth it.
Well, this is the first big weekend of Big Ten play, and we've had games played already. In fact, Illinois, I think, has already played, what, 3 Big Ten games? And they played Purdue last week. They're going out of conference this week. But then you got a bunch of conference games with Minnesota playing at Purdue, a Big Ten West matchup, Ohio State at Rutgers, and kind of an intriguing game there. The Friday night game with Iowa at Maryland. Indiana playing at Penn State. We all know what happened last year when they met in Bloomington. This time they meet in Happy Valley, and Penn State's up to number 4 in the polls. And in Lincoln, Nebraska, Saturday night, under the lights at Memorial Stadium, the Wildcats and the Nebraska Cornhuskers, who've lost 2 tough road games, as we mentioned, at Oklahoma, and then overtime last week, a night game at Michigan State. Dan, you've played in Memorial Stadium, though you never played a night game there, but you know what it's like to play in front of that crowd, and this is going to be something that these guys haven't experienced in a couple of years, going on the road and playing in front of a crowd like this, and some of them have never experienced it.
It's a great atmosphere, that's for sure. I think, talk about, you know, a cathedral of college football at Memorial Stadium. To your point, I never played at night. But I'm sure it'll be rocking, rolling, and they'll have a sold out crowd, even though Nebraska's been a little bit up and down. But yeah, I think, look, as you rolled through the different schedule of games, it's really where we start to figure out who's who and who's a pretender and a contender, right? With the Big Ten schedule
right
rolling around, we all have our favorites. But this is when you finally start to tell. And the weather's changing. It feels more like football season. Big Ten schedule kicks off. It's an exciting time.
Well, I think you know what, when you talk about exciting times, it's time for Super Joe's prediction.
Prediction, to say or estimate a specified thing will happen in the future.
Super Joe's predictions.
What's up, fellas? tough week last week as the Badgers got obliterated in the fourth quarter on the lakefront at Soldier Field against Notre Dame.
Don't you agree with me, though, that game did not feel as lopsided?
It wasn't.
As it ended up because of those pick sixes late?
Oh, yeah. I mean, they started to force it at the end of the game. Notre Dame knew what they were doing, got a couple of lucky picks. Well, I shouldn't say lucky, but they got a couple pick sixes to pour it on at the end. I don't think it was indicative, but Notre Dame was covering throughout. I mean, they were the better team even after the quarterback change. So moving on to this week, obviously super excited for the Big Ten action to get rolling here. I am actually interested in Friday Night Lights. I like the Terps getting 4. I'm willing to wait. I think that number will go up a little bit closer to kickoff. I'd like to see it around 6, 6.5. As you know, Maryland has Tua Tagovailoa's younger brother. He leads the Big Ten in passing yards and passing touchdowns. I think he keeps them in a close game. I don't see envision an upset, but anytime you're getting points at home under the lights, that's worth looking at.
And they're a good team. I mean, we saw it coming last year a little bit, and Tagovailoa played his first game for Maryland in Evanston in the opener last season, and it was a pretty lopsided blowout affair. But you could see the talent that this guy has, and now everybody around the Big Ten starting to see it.
Yeah, not to get too deep on Maryland football here, but Loxley has seriously gotten into recruiting over there in the DMV area, which you're very familiar with, Dave. Yep. I think that, you know, that's an offense. This guy has, you know, roots in Alabama. He knows how to get things going. He's got, another Tagovailoa under his wing. Maryland can get exciting. They host Iowa this weekend. They got Penn State at home later in the season, and then the second-to-last game of the season, they got Michigan at home. So it's a good schedule for the Terps. I think this could be an interesting game Friday night against the Hawkeyes.
All right. Anything else catch your eye this week?
You know, that Michigan-Wisconsin game is interesting.
Yeah.
The total is at just, I think I saw 42 points. So there's not going to be a lot of scoring. This is going to be one of those 1990s Big Ten games. It opened, I want to say, Michigan laying a point in Madison, which is interesting because Harbaugh has not coached well on the road, especially against a good team. So even though Wisconsin has two losses, that's a strong team in Madison.
Yep.
I think the spread has switched over and Wisconsin is laying points again, but I'm scared for my Wolverines going into Madison. That's going to be a tough one.
That's a scary place to play. And Dan, I'll get back to what I said to Adam. I look at Wisconsin's schedule and I've just felt this way all along, and knowing the way Iowa is playing now, the way Northwestern traditionally plays once they get into the Big Ten, even after maybe not the start they wanted, that you look at November 13th at Camp Randall Stadium. That game's going to mean something. I'm not sure right now what exactly, but you know that game's going to be meaningful, and it's going to be a fun season. There's a lot of football still to come.
Absolutely. It'll be, like you said, with Northwestern, Wisconsin, and Iowa, something always interesting happens at the end of the year, so it'll be fun to follow.
Well, this game Saturday night is going to be a good one. Nebraska, it's a 6:30 kickoff in Lincoln. Of course, you can hear it on WGN Radio with our pregame starting at 6 o'clock. That's going to do it for this edition of Collegiately Speaking. Thanks to Adam Rittenberg for jumping on with us this week. Thanks to Super Joe Romano. For Dan Persa, Dave Ennett. We'll talk to you again next week.